Hey guys, it's Stacy
and Katie,
and you're listening to the latest episode of Mothers Who Kill.
Hey guys.
Hi.
Long time no see.
Anybody still here?
Actually, apparently, according to our listens, you guys are rocking it. Thank you for the increase. The
increased listen, the increased numbers.
By 1,000,
yeah.
I believe. You guys are really rock stars. Thank you. So we haven't talked to you guys since October. Life kind of got in the way once again with health issues. I personally got COVID in the first week, I think, of January. And I'm recovered, but not... I still have the COVID calls.
Listen, yeah. December was like a downward spiral, and January just completely...
Like, the COVID cough, y'all, that shit is no joke. Like, it is still around almost 3 weeks later.
That's what I hear. I haven't had it yet.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous. Maybe I can get through this episode today without...
If not, y'all gonna bear with us anyway,
y'all just gonna bear with us. Okay, so where you got... Oh, wait, guys. We have a crazy bitch, like always.
Y'all seem to like the crazy ones, though.
No, y'all really seem to like the ones who are just extremely heinous, and we fucking love it. Like, y'all are just as morbid as we are. So, anyway, we're going to talk about Kenesha Barry today and her... insane ability to hide pregnancies.
And try to kill babies.
And try to kill babies. So we're going to jump right in.
Kenesha Barry, she killed her baby, and 5 years later she tried to kill another. In 1998, at only 20 years of age, Kenesha Barry committed one of the cruelest crimes of the past few decades.
All right, so Kenesha Barry was born Kenesha Aronda Barry on December 26, 1977 in Beaumont, Texas. We don't know a lot about Barry's past except for that she knew how to hide a pregnancy. Barry's mother, Ribby Sherman, says she only knew about one of Barry's five or more pregnancies. Barry had three other children under the age of 10, including a three-year-old boy for whom there is no birth record whatsoever. Kenesha's story begins on November 29th of 1998, when a newborn baby's body was discovered by a couple collecting aluminum cans from a dumpster. The couple noticed a black plastic garbage bag and pulled it out after they seen what they believed to be a leg of a baby doll. Instead, it was the body of a newborn baby boy. The child, who was later dubbed Baby Hope, had duct tape covering his mouth and pinning his arms to his chest. The child was estimated to be between 2 and 5 days old, and his stomach contained a milk-like product suggesting he had eaten shortly before his death. Forensic pathologist Tommy Brown performed Baby Hope's autopsy and found evidence that the baby had died from oxygen deprivation and that the cause of his death was officially ruled as asphyxia due to smothering. I'm telling y'all, this is... reading from a script is rough. The bag Baby Hope's body had been found in contained feces, and it was Brown's opinion that the infant had been alive when he was placed in the trash bag, where he voided his bowels upon death, which is normal for people who pass away. The death was ruled a homicide. Baby Hope's case remained unsolved for 5 years until another newborn was found abandoned in June of 2003. On June 6th of 2003, a newborn baby girl was found by a passerby. She had been abandoned in a ditch naked and was covered in fire ants. She was taken to the hospital to be treated for the ant bites across her body, including her eyes, which had swollen shut after being bitten. She required a blood transfusion and experienced seizures in the hospital, but she survived and was placed into foster care. The abandoned infant was traced to 25-year-old Kenesha Barry. Debbie Beavers of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department questioned Barry about the child. During the investigation, Barry brought Beavers to a dumpster where she said she had thrown some evidence from the most recent birth. This dumpster was the same in which Baby Hope had been found. This prompted Barry's fingerprints to be compared to the latent prints from the plastic bag and duct tape used in the Baby Hope case. Of course, they matched. Barry also consented to a DNA test, which showed that showed a 99.98% probability that she was the mother of the discarded newborn. Barry was taken into custody for the abandonment of her daughter and the murder of her son.
CPS took custody of Barry's abandoned daughter, as well as her older children, who raised from 3 to 9 years of age. While in custody, Barry admitted to abandoning her daughter and explained the disposal of her son's body. Though she did not confess to killing him, she stated she delivered her son, who she had named Malachi, during a home delivery and that he was, quote, fine at birth. She had concealed her pregnancy from family and friends and explained that some presence of Malachi by claiming she was watching a friend's baby. According to Barry, she placed Malachi in the trash bag, that he was not kicking or moving, and that she later used her grandmother's car to drive to the apartment complex dumpster where she discarded the remains of her son. Can we discuss one thing? What's in her mind if she knows that she's about to discard the baby? Why does she name the baby?
Right. Why did she name not one?
But two. And then fed the first one.
And she fed him milk.
Yeah.
We don't know what goes on in these people's minds, especially with the fact that her mother said she only knew about, what, three? One or three?
But I later realized that if she had said that the family knew about any of the pregnancies, that would jeopardize where the kids went. Foster.
Okay.
Could she lied about not knowing about the present pregnancies because of that issue? We will never know.
No, we'll never know.
At her trial, Barry testified that she did not kill Malachi. She again stated that she knew that she was pregnant, but did not tell family or friends. She gave birth to Malachi at home. She again said that he appeared healthy when he was born and that she fed him milk from the bottle. The day after his birth, Barry said that Malachi had a runny nose and that she left him home alone to buy more milk at the store. Well, first of all, what the fuck?
You're just gonna randomly leave your newborn alone? Especially if he's got a runny nose? Like, what?
When she returned from the store, she said that the baby was sleeping, so she laid around watching TV. But as time went on, she was concerned that he was not waking up. When she checked on him, Barry found Malachi limp and noticed that he was not moving or breathing. Barry further testified that she did not call for help because she was scared and didn't know if it was against the law to have the baby at home by itself.
By herself? So she didn't know if it was against the law. Yes. Yes, you have a baby. You're supposed to.
That little thing that you're supposed to listen to your gut. Yeah. Might want to listen to that. Barry further testified that she did not call for help because just read that.
Yeah.
Barry stated that she taped Malachi's arms to his chest because they had started to stiffen and stick out from his body. And she taped his mouth shut because she was bothered when it remained open. Bless your heart. You're bothered.
Imagine him.
Developmental psychologist Dr. Fitzpatrick spoke on Barry's behalf at trial regarding certain mitigating circumstances in her case, testifying Barry was, quote, under an extreme amount of pressure at the time of Malachi's death, and her background did not promote reaching out to others for assistance. The prosecution, I can never say that word, prosecution referenced Barry's decision to abandon her daughter 5 years after her son's death, and
Just keep going. It's fine.
Where do I go to, though?
Bear with us, guys. It's been a while.
Barry was convicted of Malachi's murder in 2004 and was sentenced to death. Chill.
So you would think with her being convicted and sentenced to death that that would be the end of the story. But, of course, in 2007, Barry appealed her sentence. Forensic pathologist Stephen Puslenik, don't don't quote me on that one, was brought in as the defense expert and testified that after reviewing Malachi's autopsy report, photographs, and slides from his lungs, he observed multiple areas of meconium, which is the first stool of an infant, which can release in utero, two aspirations in the slides from the newborn's lungs. Plus, Linick testified that he believed Malachi's meconium was released prior to his birth, was brought into his lungs, and caused, quote, a significant pneumonia enough to explain this child being very sick, sick enough to die. Okay, sure, whatever. Another defense expert, Carl Hunt, a medical doctor specializing in pediatrics and neonatology, testified that the tape on Malachi's mouth, quote, would not be suffocating to this infant, as young infants prefer to breathe through their nose. Okay. Puslenik had testified with a similar statement, but had noted that the plastic bag in which Malachi was found would have been sufficient to suffocate the newborn. So, which is it? Duct tape? Or a plastic bag? Are you contradicting yourselves here? Hunt continued with his testimony to state that he could not determine how Malachi had died, either by homicide or natural causes, until he spoke with Puslenik. Good grief, what a name! Who informed him of the meconium in Malachi's lungs. Hunt then concluded, quote, this infant died of natural causes related to birth, asphyxiation, and meconium is aspiration syndrome. In other words, lung failure. Okay.
No.
No. Anyway, of course the defense is going to try to...
smothering the
asphyxiation. Yeah, it's hard to get these words out. Listen, don't judge us, okay? All right, so... the forensic pathologist, Tommy Brown, who had conducted Malachi's autopsy, returned as an expert for the prosecution. We know that the duct tape had been used to cover his mouth and constrain his arms around his abdomen, and that he had been placed inside a plastic trash bag. Brown had estimated Malachi to be 2 to 5 days old, which goes against Barry's statements that she had him and he died the next day, or she discarded him the next day. All right. His stomach contained a milk-like product, which indicated that he had been fed before his death, which Barry admitted to. And there was fecal matter. That's the only consistent part, that she fed him milk. And that there was fecal matter inside the trash bag. Malachi had petechiae, a pleural surfaces of the lungs, which is consistent with oxygen deprivation. The combination of being duct taped, covered with a plastic bag, was also consistent with oxygen deprivation. Yeah. Well, he's calling it. At least he's calling it oxygen deprivation.
We can't see it anyway.
I can't get it out. Brown observed no indications of an infection or sudden infant death syndrome. So that would throw out the defenses.
Dying
from inhalation of whatever.
Natural causes,
yeah. He determined that Malachi died from asphyxia due to smothering and ruled the death a homicide. He disagreed with the findings of pneumonia and infections in Malachi's lungs, testifying, quote, in pneumonia, you have to have neutrophils, which are white blood cells for bacterial infection, or you have lymphocytes, do not come after me, which indicates a viral infection. The baby had neither of those. I cannot call this pneumonia, end quote. Brown also noted that a newborn baby with a viral infection or pneumonia would fuss and not be described as fine, as Barry had previously testified. Brown's opinion is that the infant was still alive when he was placed in the trash bag, and that as the baby died, there was a large release of fecal matter from the rectum. The lividity on the anterior and posterior sides of the body led him to conclude that the infant was lying on his stomach when he had died, and that after he was discovered and he was turned over and placed on his back for a short period of time. Which means, I guess, when the couple found him, they turned the bag over or whatever. Anyway, the court upheld Barry's conviction but overturned her death sentence, giving her a life term instead of capital punishment. She will be eligible for parole in 2044. Well, we'll see about that. All right, so with few trip-ups, I guess.
No, but we tripped up.
Guys, do not judge us, okay?
This one's been a while. We don't care.
Our day, yeah. So, any thoughts on this crazy?
I mean, I do, but I probably shouldn't say them.
I don't know. The fact that she got away with this, well, didn't get away with it.
But did it twice.
But did it twice. I guess she thought, I didn't get caught. The first time, let's do it again. Thank goodness Paris survived and is in foster care, I'm assuming.
And DNA is an amazing thing, too.
The DNA is wonderful.
It never lies.
No, it doesn't. So think about that if you guys want to commit murder.
Or abandoned babies.
Or abandoned babies. Look, just if you don't want to have kids, just don't have kids.
Let's not get started.
We're not going to get started.
Anyway.
Thank you guys again for the listens.
Likes, follows.
All our rock stars. If you want, we have a Facebook page you guys can follow. It's just Mothers Who Kill Podcast on Facebook. Mothers Who Kill Podcast on Twitter.
Don't forget we have Missing in Mississippi too, where we just did an update episode that's going to drop the same day this episode drops too as well.
Right, so two podcasts with new episodes dropping on the same day. No, that's great, actually. Anyway, guys, we'll have another episode coming at you next week. Miss Diane Downs.
Yeah.
She's, I guess, would you say the original crazy mom? One of the original? Because she...
One of the OGs.
She's one of the... She was 1983, so that's interesting. All right, guys. Well, anyway, enough rambling. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.